of having no problem supplying. We are now going to receive a presentation from NFPS. And looking at the history and our experience, we know that NFPF is one of those entities that are troubled. And we would urge them to be open with the portfolio committee to say this, in fact, from the department to the entity to tell us what is exactly happening there now. And be open about it so that as the portfolio committee we can be able to assess the situation and find and recommend accordingly. We are encouraging you to be open and frank with us, as we will be open and frank with you. As we go together as a team, we're going to be open and frank with you. So I'm giving over to the department to give an overview. An overview is an overview. Don't give us the details. The entity is going to give us the details. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and the Honorable Members. I would therefore then request, Honorable Chair, that we go straight to slide 14. The reason for that, I think the precursor slides are the slides we presented when we were doing the strategy plan of overview. And it just talks to alignment with the AP policies and legislation. May I request that we go straight to slide 14? Honorable Chair, slide 14 is relating to the status of governance and whether the governance is in place, is it functioning? And so the council members, as at the end of the 31st of March 2017, 30, and the number of meetings that have set, 8, and the number of council meetings, and then that we have committees that have set, 9. If we look at the attendance, there has been a consistency of 98%, and which is just a slight drop of 1% from the previous financial year. But clearly the members are indeed attending the meetings. The audit committee meetings is at 4, and then the management, number of management meetings themselves at 8, which is an increase compared to the previous day of 2. And then the number of staff meetings is at 4, which is consistent with the previous financial year. If we look at the performance, we look at slide 15, it just talks to the performance trends, Honorable Chairperson will just go straight to the one of targets achieved, which indicates that 98% and only 2% of the targets were not achieved. And the target not achieved really relates to policy manuals that were not approved by council as at the end of 2017-18. And the entity then had to embark on an organizational design process and resolve to complete the process first before approving any policy that would be new. Hence, they are at that 98% of achievement. If we then look at the issue of the slide 16, just briefly, it just explains the reasons for the non-achievement, which I have indicated. However, to ratify this situation in relation to the three policy manuals, then the entity will be, NFPF will then be having this as part of their program for this current. 18, 19. I then request that we move to slide 19, and the reason for that, Honorable Chair, is just to talk to the summary of the financial health of the institution in slide 19, which indicates under the net working capital or surplus that they currently have 21.478 million. If it is like that, it means it's a surplus rather than a deficit, because a deficit is marked in brackets. And that then assumes that the institution has some health, financial health status as we speak. I did not go to slide 17, Honorable Chair, because it was just going to show at some point the deficit that is there, which was an increase, but the net working capital, as things stand, is at 21.478 million. In relation to audit outcomes, our analysis is that they have remained consistent with the unqualified audit, however, with the findings, which is an indication that I think we will ask the institute to then indicate whether those findings are higher compared to the previous year or not. But if we look at the, when we analyze that, they have a challenge relating to the details on irregular expenditure, which is an increase, in fact, compared to the previous year, because it is at a total expenditure of 9.5 million rands if you add the 2 million and the 7, which is both the previous financial year and this current financial year. However, the entity has shown us that the disciplinary process has been undertaken in this regard, and that is relating to a marketing contract. And they will then provide the nature of why is it irregular. On the challenges, Honorable Chair, as you indicated, we should be open with you. The main essence there was what we known that there were complaints by the staff in the year under reporting. And during that period, then the department had to institute through the minister a forensic exercise. During that forensic exercise, the session then got completed in March 2018 and was presented then to the council. The details, I don't know if the Honorable Chair would like me to go through the findings one by one, but they are broken down there, as well as the progress relating to that. However, we can just indicate that those who were found to be to have flouted or transgressed and identified to have done wrong in the forensic report, they were issued a letter of demand and were sent to all the individuals. We can indicate that the CEO thereafter resigned, and the 70 received 70,140 from the former CFO as a payment, and then a settlement agreement is in the process of being concluded with the former CEO at a cost of 75,876 rand. The summons have been to the Bill of 39 have been issued for the former deputy chairperson. This all relates to the finding around the issue of family members who were taken to self-test outside of what the invitation was saying, that there were some who were supposed to take to that self-test hold, and therefore the entity incurred this cost, which they need to recover from the individuals as indicated. I thought, Chairperson, if you then allow, I can go and summarize, because I think the details, then the Chairperson is here, and the acting CEO is here, because after the CEO resigned, then the acting CEO was appointed, and he resigned from being a member of the council, and is currently the one who is having the stewardship of the entity currently. So I thought I will skip all the findings. The breakdown is there, Honorable Chair, and go to slide 26, which simply indicates that subsequent to that, those challenges that were being identified by the forensic, there was yet again an anonymous letter that was then sent from concerned staff of the NFVF, pleading once more for ministers' intervention on a number of issues. This correspondence was then forwarded to the council on the allegations raised, and they have committed to the ministry that they will be able to attend to the matter with greater sense of urgency. The last item talks to, again, another upheaval that the institution faced, that is 1927, where the council members, 8 of the 11, requested that the minister invoke section 6, subsection 6 of the NFVF Act, which regards the removal of 3 members. The minister convened a meeting of the whole council to establish the veracity of the allegations and also to try and find a way to resolve the problem. We can report here that subsequent to that meeting, no one was removed from the council. However, the council then was given particular tasks that they need to perform and address. But also in terms of section 6, subsection 6 of their act, is a last resort, is a measure of last resort, where when all else has failed, you resort to removal of a member. But there must be demonstration of interventions made to try and address the problem, but also to make sure that the entity is first able to try and work more as a team. So that is a second chance they've been given. And when that then is being done for them to resolve those challenges that they have, and which I'm not sure whether the Honorable Chair would like me to talk to, but that letter was clear on what were the challenges that they thought needed to be addressed through the removal of the 3 members. But instead, the minister intervened, and they've been given that chance to try and focus on their mandate and also to work as a team and to demonstrate leadership there. In that regard, the second task the minister gave to them was that the department is preparing for ministers of BRICS who are responsible for arts and culture, and that will be taking place at the end of October. And therefore, the one of the key responses they were giving was the emphasis in this meeting of ministers of BRICS, of arts and culture from BRICS countries, will be about how South Africa can best benefit from the film industry, so that when there is a signing of that agreement, whether it's a co-production treaty or whatever, that must be based on input by NFVF, who hold the key on development and promotion of film industry in South Africa. And that is what Minister then requested that they do. But those were the 2 things that Minister asked them to do. Honorable Chair, I'm not sure whether I cut it too close, but I believe the details will come more from the Council and the NFVF management. I therefore submit. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy. When I was going through this presentation, I'm like, hey, I saw the bad bastard, but you'll never know us, really. Because after we made it clear that as the portfolio committee, we need specific when you present to us our wish. You tell us exactly what is going to be done, when it's going to be done, who's going to do it, so that we are in a position to monitor and evaluate in our oversight. And if you tell us that, for instance, NFVF has committed to respond to the ministerial correspondence as a matter of urgency. What's the matter of urgency? We don't know a matter of urgency as the portfolio committee. You need to tell us, you know, but they were given correspondence on this day, and on this day we are going to receive the, you know, because of matter of urgency, we can't monitor that. We can't monitor matter, we don't know what it is. So it's very important that when you report to us, you are specific, so that we are able to follow up on this matter that you put before us. I think that's very important, and we've said this from day one. And the issue of us having to probe for information, this is what we said from 2014, that when you give us information, make sure that you give us all the information. For instance, now that the former CEO has resigned, the PA position was at the time, no action has been taken against the PA, understanding, we understand that, but where's the PA now? And does this have any impact on the structure of NSDF, like you have now an additional person who was not there initially? What are the implications of this? So you give us that information. Okay, let's not dwell on that, but I was just showing you, Gigi, that in your presentation, please be specific. Tell us exactly. We've always asked for this, and seemingly we'll ask for it until we leave this place next year, in whatever month. Can we give, thank you for the presentation. We are now giving Honorable Mark.
It's fine, Chair. We can allow them to present the entity, but there are issues that we will want to ask the department, because we can't ask the entity because it's involved. Then I don't have a problem. We can continue to present.
Do as we did with Msunduzi. We let them both present, and then we can come back to the department if there are issues that you want to question around their presentation. NSDF?
Thank you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Good afternoon. And thanks to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. The slides that I will present, I will not take them one by one at verbatim, because this presentation was circulated at the end of August. But the one which is the final one that I will be reading from, Chairperson, was distributed this morning, and I will explain why. It's not a major substantial difference. The one that was circulated this morning, we added graphs. And these graphs were to assist honorable members with more detail pertaining to demographics, race, gender, and provincial spread of the work we are doing. So that is the only addition. And Chairperson, with your indulgence, I would like to therefore request to proceed, save for that deviation that I have alluded to. In our delegation, it's myself. My name is Phil Molefe. I am the chairperson of the NFVF, and I am accompanied by the deputy chairperson of the NFVF, Ms. Zimkita Zatu, who also does a lot of work on council with regard to financial matters, because she is a chartered accountant. We also have in the delegation the acting CEO, Mr. Shadrach Bukaba, who used to be a member of council, and as the DG explained, when the former CEO resigned at the end of May 2018, council then appointed Mr. Bukaba to act as CEO. And then the fourth member of the delegation is Ms. Mbali Buthelezi, who is the CFO. She has just joined the organization. She started in May 2018. Perhaps Mbali, you can wait, because it's your first, this is your maiden appearance to this August committee. Mbali joined the NFVF from the Auditor General of South Africa. I hope, honorable members, you will appreciate that as a movement in a particular direction to deal with the issues that we had been confronted with. She was specifically handpicked after a process that involved interviews, specifically to assist the organization with the issues that we have had to grapple with. Chairperson, let me state at the outset that I accept your invitation to present to this committee with unrivaled candor, because there is absolutely nothing to hold back from this committee. In the event there is detail that misses in the course of my presentation, that would not be a deliberate intention to hold anything back, because we would like to bear it all. Having said that, Chairperson, let me just deal with the thrust of our presentation. For ease of reference, it is broken in three parts. The first part is the strategic level and strategic overview of the organization. And in the updated presentation, that will be slides 1 to 8. The second part of the presentation will be slides 17 to 36. Please indulge me to skip from 8 to 17, and I'll explain why we are doing that. 1 to 8 deals with strategy. 7 to 36 deals with implementation and performance plan. And we thought that actually gives a seamless flow to move from strategy and to the implementation of that strategy. Then slides 9 to 16 deal with the finances. That is the only hole I created by jumping to performance presentation. And the reason, honorable members, basically to have a strategy. What is the strategic direction of the NFVF? Then two, the implementation and performance. What are we doing, therefore, to implement that strategy, to ensure that our day-to-day operations speak to the strategy of the council? And the implementation will deal with three broad areas. And these are production and development. That is the work that we do to support the production of film and the development of the industry. The second part on performance will deal with promotion. That is the marketing of film and also to promote the South African film industry globally. Because film is a global product. It is produced locally and yet consumed globally. And then the last part, honorable members, will deal with bazaars. So these are the three critical areas that preoccupy the work of the National Film and Film and Video Foundation. Bazaars is the monies that we are entrusted with by the department or by government, if you like, to disburse and to award to deserving South Africans. And that performance will speak to that area. Chairperson, I think right at the outset it is important to point out that, yes, these words sound colorful and good, strategy, implementation, and finances. But the story of the NFVF is like reading a film script. A film script has highs, a film script has lows. And indeed, that is the episode. That is the story of the NFVF. It has its own highs and it has its own lows. And that I will be the first to admit right at the outset. However, what is encouraging, Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, is what have we done with these issues when they were brought to light? And what has the board of the NFVF done with these issues when investigations were carried out and all that? I think that is of critical importance to really pay attention to the work that has been done by this board to respond to those challenges and to address the issues that were raised, particularly with regard to the collapse of governments, the issues around the erosion of institutional processes and maladministration. On strategy, Chairperson, and now that takes you to slide number 8, it summarizes the strategic goals of the NFVF. These strategic goals are 9 in number, and that slide encapsulates everything that is captured in the 3 preceding slides, which are about the vision, the mission of the organization, and the strategic overview, because the vision is embedded in these goals, and the overview is basically the practical application of these goals. And in brief, honorable members, the 9 strategic goals of the NFVF are the first one, and which is informed by the constitution of our country, is transformation. This is uppermost in our program of action to accelerate the support of previously disadvantaged individuals and to transform the film industry. And our strategic goals are not just a pie in the sky. They were developed and crafted in a way that these goals should speak to our APP, which is our annual performance plan, and the annual performance plan is aligned to the DAC goals. So number 1 is transformation, and in the performance, you will then see how have we performed in respect of this goal. And number 2, our goal is human capital development. We are aware of the historical imbalances in our country, and the film industry did not escape these imbalances. So to ensure that we accelerate the support of PDIs, we also had to provide support through skill development and training. So training has been one of the core focus of the NFVF. And in our presentation on performance, we will demonstrate how that was done and how it was achieved. Content, development of content and production, this is where we have ensured that we increase the number of films that are written, produced and directed by previously disadvantaged individuals. Chairperson, notwithstanding the problems and the challenges we've experienced, I think this is one area where the NFVF has made a recognizable achievement in terms of transforming the film industry. We introduced in the last 3 years what we call Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 funding model. In terms of that funding model, we moved money that historically was awarded to established and experienced filmmakers. We moved that allocation by creating Tier 3. And Tier 3, these were young, aspirant filmmakers, largely from historically disadvantaged areas. And the slides will show there, even with the graphs, how this money has moved from the historically advantaged and moved to the previously disadvantaged. And that is part of our contribution to transformation, but also importantly, to ensuring that film is developed, is written, and directed by previously disadvantaged individuals. The promotion of film, the markets of the content, this is one of our strategic goals, to make sure that South African film travels to foreign destinations. As I said, film may well be produced locally, but it is a product that is consumed in Hollywood, in New York, in France, in Canada, and indeed, as we begin now to make penetrations, even to China, as we are beginning to form partnerships within the BRICS context. So marketing is a very important strategic goal of the NFVF. Infrastructure development, this is one area of our strategy that is beginning to take form. The strategic aim of this goal is to make sure that we increase the accessibility of film. Film can be accessed in the townships, in rural areas, and even in parts of the country where film had not existed, because we know, because of our history, film is largely in cinemas, and cinemas are in cities, and these cities are, in the main, your big cities. But we have already started working with the Department of Arts and Culture to do infrastructure development. This is a program funded by the DAC and managed by the NFVF in collaboration with provinces and local authorities. One example, Chairperson, and which is something perhaps that will please you, despite, you know, your mood that, you know, gloves have to be taken off, but we have started doing work in East London where a bioscope, and we use that word bioscope because that's how we grew up knowing it to be, and that's the township parlance for what a cinema represents. And a memorandum of understanding is now being concluded. On Thursday, in fact, we are signing with provincial government of the Eastern Cape for the development of this infrastructure, starting in Buffalo City and going to Port Elizabeth. It doesn't end in Eastern Cape. We will be going to other provinces as well. Then policy and research, This is what we've been doing, to develop policy which will show that film is not just a matter of arts and entertainment, but film is economy. To look at what is the contribution of the South African film industry to the GDP. And 2 years ago, the NFVF released a research document that looked at the multiplier effect of the South African film industry and how film, in fact, has the effect of converting for 1 rand that is spent in film, you actually have a multiplier effect of 1.8, which means 1 rand can be grown to something that will make this industry a real economic activity. Social cohesion deals with telling our own stories. And the last two strategic goals, Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, deal with partnerships. The main partnerships we are now driving are, one, with the BRICS countries, and we're drawing this from the policy of our country in the multilateral relations that South Africa has with Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And film, we have actually identified a strategic input that we make to the BRICS partnership. And for this to be meaningful, we then added Africa focus. Africa is important, not just for the sentiment of saying we are Africans, but also for the economic sense and the geographic sense, using South Africa as the bridgehead into the continent of Africa, but also appreciating the fact that if China is 1.3, the population is 1.3, and India 1.29, as the total population of Africa, we come in at 1.3, which actually then puts us as equals on the table when we come in with the collective strength of the continent of Africa. And we want to make sure that the partnerships we create with African countries really benefit South Africa in the final analysis. In a matter of days, the acting CEO will be traveling to Ghana with the Department of Arts and Culture for the promotion of South African film in Ghana. And it's one of the things we are doing. And recently, South Africa was appointed chair of the Africa Film Forum. So this speaks to the strategic goals that we want to drive as an organization. Chairperson, I take you now to the second part of this presentation. And we should be able to go through that one fairly rapidly, because strategy was to lay the building blocks. So I'm going to ask the CEO to take us through slides 17 to 36, and that is performance. And this performance speaks to strategy. After the CEO, acting CEO, then the deputy chair will take us back to slides 9 to 16 to speak about the finances, so that you can see our expenditure, our costs, in the context of strategy and performance. We're spending so much because our strategy seeks to achieve this, and this is how we are performing to deliver on that strategy. So, Chairperson, I hand over to the acting CEO.
Thank you, Chair. And honorable members. The chairperson of the NFVF, Mr. Phil Molefe, has spoken about the 9 strategic pillars of the NFVF. So as management, we have translated these 9 pillars into 4 programs, the first of which is training and skills development. Now, training and skills development, as an example, speaks to 2 of the pillars that the chair mentioned. These include
transformation and human capital development. So we have set ourselves six targets in this regard that we will achieve. And I'm happy to inform the committee that all targets were met with some overachievements in places. And now the overachievement may look suspicious, because if you set yourself a target of 66 and then yet you go on to reach 128, people start asking questions of why is that number looking inflated. This appears in the bursaries that were awarded in the previous financial year. The same can be argued with the next one, where we had said that we will reach 25 interns, we will take them in. Instead, we met 120 interns, we placed them. This is very simple. The CETA within our industry, this CETA is responsible for media, information, and communication technologies, commonly referred to as CETA, came at a late stage, because when we do the planning, we work with the money that is in the bank. And so those inform, those amounts will inform the target. Then when they come at a later stage to say, here's additional funding, then we are happy to add so that we can reach even more people who need our assistance. So those will explain the numbers that look a bit out of order in the first two columns there. And then in the next slide, these are just the breakdowns speaking to the transformation and human capital development. Let me at this point also remind members that this is development of the industry, of filmmakers. It's not of NFVF staff. It is of the industry. So how did we perform in this regard? You can see the graph is growing from 2015, 16, 16, 17. It continues to grow in terms of bursaries awarded. It dropped in the last financial year due to the absence of the MEFCETA grant. But in terms of our own money that we had budgeted for, we attained the goals that we have set ourselves. The challenge usually arises when you talk to the geographic spread. And so we thought this slide will help you see where the applications are received from across South Africa. You know, there's a big number that's just hovering over Gauteng there, and then followed by the Western Cape. And let me explain the blank as well, the major questions there. When people fill in the application forms, not everyone fills in the provinces that they're coming from. So we recorded it as blank because we don't want to allocate it to any province and take a guess. But it must also be remembered that Gauteng is the economic hub of the country. So many people that are in Gauteng, many of them come from different provinces and are just based there so that they can access other opportunities. So they submit their applications from Gauteng. So it looks like beneficiaries come from Gauteng, all of them. But if you look closer, many of them are from other provinces, even though it's indicated like this. We have also taken care that the provinces that have not shown much movement, we do workshops and road shows. And this has been happening. For example, there was no movement in the past, honorable members, if you recall the last presentations, you know, the three states there, and Mpumalanga and Northwest, there was nothing, and there were road shows as a result, and then you're beginning to see movement. I mean, if the number, the previous number was zero, now you see one. That's 100% increase. And so we will continue working in this regard. And a special focus will be paid to provinces such as the Northern Cape, where we continue to do roadshows, and there's another one scheduled in the near future. This bursaries also can be viewed in terms of the level academic level at the university. No, it's not the level of schooling as indicated on the slide. So we have one PhD student, and the majority of the applicants are in the second and the third year of the bachelor's degree. So because we have limited funds, so you see that in year one of last year, the first year, we only had four students because we had many students in the pipeline still. So we couldn't take more than four so that we keep the ones that are already within our systems on board. Otherwise, if we took, we're going to have to drop some of the learners that are doing well at varsity. The next slide gives you the opportunity to see what is the most popular course by our learners. And the most popular one is film and television production. But it's also encouraging to see that emerging areas such as digital animation and cinematography, I mean, animation on its own is worldwide, is taking off. And in South Africa, we're seeing the same trend. So many young South Africans are taking into this field, and this is all very encouraging. Let's look at the allocation of funds per institution. Let's see where the NSDF's money goes to, which institutions. You will see the top two are private institutions, which is AFDA and City Varsity. And so they continue like that. There's a new policy on the table at the NSDF, where we are encouraging learners to go to public universities. There's a simple reason for this. While these very universities that I'm referring to, the private institutions, are very, very good, for each one that we fund who goes to a private institution, we could support three that go to a public institution. So now the policy is trying to help us channel the new applicants to our own public institutions, which are equally competitive, by the way. So that's where we would like to see our money spent so that we can accommodate even more learners. The next slide, because issues of race and gender are real, and we have talked about transformation. So transformation talks to this too as well. We are seeing our money being spent on 88% of the grants allocated by the NSDF go to black filmmakers of any level, whether it's the youth, women, or professional. It's 88% they go to black people. In terms of gender, this is where our work continues, because at the moment we're sitting at 44% of beneficiaries being our women. And I will talk later to this, what I heard the chair say, we want to know what you are doing. So I will respond to what we are doing in terms of gender so that we can explain to you what you expect in terms of our transformation regarding gender. The next slide talks to internships. For us, internships is big. The graph there keeps going higher and higher because we think there's no other way. Learners have to learn on the job so that they can be fast-tracked, especially if they are talented. And many of these learners come from Gauteng, as you can see there. 78% came from Gauteng, followed by Western Cape at 20 and the Eastern Cape at 20. Many people traditionally would expect that KZN, Western Cape and Gauteng, the Eastern Cape has just shot up here. But this is an explanation which has to do with infrastructure. This is explained in this slide here that Bay TV in the Eastern Cape is quite active. It has taken 20 learners in the last financial year, but the NSDF itself, we cannot be preaching this message while we don't participate in internships ourselves. So we have taken 18 of interns last year. This is what we do on an annual basis. And as we speak now, we continue talking to this point of internship. The next section of my presentation is on policy and research. Oh, I will try to move faster. In policy and research, Chair, we have met on the target that we set ourselves in. But the main aim of the policy and research is that we should be leaders and influence the development of film-related policies and strategies at local level, provincial, national, and regional. And we continue doing this. We commission our own work, which we then present at industry we engage with the industry so that we can feed them the statistics. Production and development is our core business. This is where we fund filmmakers, and our main aim, if I will put this in one sentence, is to increase the number of films written, produced, and directed by PDIs. This is will be not the one aim, but the main aim for us. We set ourselves 9 targets in this regard. We have overachieved by 4, and we met 5, just met them. And then the last one, so that I meet the time, is the the marketing and distribution. There are certain targets in this regard. I won't talk to them because they are lengthy if I go to them individually, but we overachieved here by 6 and just meeting the rest, meeting the target as set in the remaining ones. The main aim of this area of participation is to promote South African film industry locally and globally and to increase audience access to South African films. So this the chair also spoke to, including the discussion on BRICS. I think in a nutshell, that is our role through those 4 programs. The small section, honorable members, that follows is on the management of the NSDF, the administration. But this, in this regard, it is mostly the, in terms of compliance, which all targets have been met. We have separated the compliance areas with the investigations, which we will address after the financial report has been presented. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'll speak to a bit of governance, the audit outcomes, and some of the finances I'll be assisted by the CFO. So our role as the accounting authority is supported by the work that the audit committee does. It's made up of a good caliber of individuals, most of which are independent, and is chaired by an independent person. So their findings for the financial year 2018 was that they were satisfied with the financial statements and we got an unqualified audit with some findings. So I'll talk about the findings now. There were 3 findings mainly. One related to an emphasis of matter, which is the 7 million that related to irregular expenditure. 2 million was a carryover from the previous year. Most of that expenditure related to the renovations project. So the finding, and I think it was looked at also from the DAC's point of view through the Comperio investigation, the finding was that 2 things, the project in itself went over budget, and the second thing was that supply chain policies were not adhered to. That was in relation to the splitting of the work to avoid going through tender processes. So that is a carryover from the previous project. The second issue that was a big issue was relating to 1.6 million relating to a marketing contract with Live Plus. The reason for that was that there was a contract amount that was agreed to, and there was a lot of work that went out of scope of that contract relating to the branding and the communication. So where we employed Live Plus to do a certain amount of work, we then ended up using them for work that was not specified in the contract, and they viewed that as being out of scope, and so that related in over expenditure. The second issue related to the second finding, the main finding was relating to a material misstatement relating to how we treat operating leases. So GRAP 13, paragraph 40 requires us to straight line the lease expenses. We did not do that, but that was corrected subsequently in the financial statement. So the financial statements that you see, we've corrected for that misstatement. The third issue related to a conflict of interest that was not reported by someone who was in the service of the entity. That was in relation to non-complying with what the PFMA says in terms of declaring where there's a relation or financial interest relating to something that's been discussed. So those are the three main findings. I'll just talk about 2 investigations that are underway at the moment. The one relates to a fraud that happened in 2016 relating to the bursary expenditure. It's about 593,000. We have instituted criminal proceedings and civil proceedings relating to an ex-employee that was found to have misuse some of the findings related to that. So we have blocked the individual's pension fund relating to our claim, so they weren't allowed to take that money, and the pension funds authority allowed us, fortunately, to be able to do that until the matter is settled. The second investigation, and I think that's what the DG touched on, was the investigation that was commissioned by the Department of Arts and Culture to look at failure of governance processes. This investigation has been finalized. We are going after the individuals that are named in that investigation in terms of trying to recover some of the funding. And I think we were lucky because with the new CFO coming in, we had an opportunity to look at broadly our contract management and also our supply chain to see where we can strengthen, where there were weaknesses that were identified by this investigation. So we are strengthening our supply chain and our contract management in that regard. I think I'll hand over to the CFO, brand new CFO, to talk about the numbers.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, and everybody, good afternoon. I'll be looking at page 12, which is just a brief summary of our financial position as the entity. We currently sit in, if you're looking at our net financial position, you will see that we have had a decrease in our total assets, an increase in our liability, and overall we had an accumulated surplus of 4.4 million rand, which leads us to the net asset liabilities of 79 million rand. I'll move over to the statement of financial performance, where we're sitting at a total revenue of 149 million, and that is made up of 129 million rand that is coming from the DAC annual allocation, and the rest of the 16.8 million rand, which is the partnership recoupment and other, which comes from the funding that we raised as the NFVF, and most of it went towards the SAFTAs and the MEXISA grant. And we also had a 3.6 million rand interest that is coming from the investments. Okay, we move over to page 14, a summary of what I've already spoken to. And page 15 speaks to the state, to the expenditure part of it. And this part of the slide is just as a nice snapshot of where the money went. So you'll see that the CEO has already spoken to the annual performance report that tells us exactly what we have done as the NFVF, and this is the split of the money. So we see that 16 million went towards training, 46, which is a bulk of our money, went towards development and production, and another bulk of it went towards local and global positioning. But most of it is also the sectors which has been funded that is sitting under local and global positioning. So the total expenditure that comes from the grant spending is 115 million rand, and that excludes the operational expenditure of 40 million rand that we incurred for the year. In total, we had a deficit as per accounting of 6 million rand, but if you're looking at our cash and cash expenditure, we are sitting at a comfortable or positive financial position because we still have investments in the bank account. And that investment is solely for the filmmakers which we have granted the funding for the film. What normally happens is it's paid over a period of 2 years. So what we do is we set it aside in investments, and then when they claim it, when they reach the certain period in within the contract, then we disperse it to them. I think overall that is the financial performance and position of the NFVF for the 2017-18 year. Thank you.
Presentation. Just to conclude with this statement, that in all that we have presented to you, honorable members. There has indeed been turbulences along the way. But as I said, at this board, we have put measures in place to deal and to address those issues. And number two, also to make sure that we put a management team in place, as we have demonstrated with the appointment of the CFO and the appointment of the heads of operations, to make sure that we appoint competent people who at an operational level will support this council to really perform and carry out its mandate. So thank you very much indeed, Chairperson and honorable members.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And I think, as I said to DJ earlier, we appreciate the presentation, but we need your presentation to be specific so that we don't have to waste time asking questions. For instance, if you're saying that from various stakeholders, what various stakeholders to a person who's sitting here? Get what I mean? In your presentation, you say the variance was sourced from sponsorships and partnerships agreement entered into with various stakeholders. Who's that? We don't know various stakeholders. You know. And the reason for you to be here is to let us know. And if you do that, you really are not giving us the information that we need, that's going to assist us to do our job. So when you present to the portfolio committee, you need to be specific. And one thing that I would like to raise is that I think it's important as you reorganize yourself, and this is something that I've said to the department as well, that you need to have people that are going to deal with applicants, people who are applying to you. Because as I'm sitting here, I have letters of people who have written, who have submitted their proposals to you, and they never received anything. They never received any response. They are angry at me now. You know? And I have very little power to do anything. So you need to have people in your institution that deal with the correspondence and respond to people. We need to have this responsive civil service. You know, it's important. And I don't know how we should say this as the portfolio committee. I don't know. We need to have a strategy planning session where we're going to coin a message that's going to ensure that you listen to this. We can't keep on doing the work that you are supposed to do. Auto production has applied to you, and when people apply to you, you need as officials, definitely official people, to understand that when it is said that you are a civil servant, you are just there. You are the servant of the people. And when people come to you, you don't take people for granted. You don't do that. You respond to people. And in some cases, they only want that. That's the only thing they want from you, is for you to respond to them. And if you don't respond to them, why are you employed there in the first place? You know? So I have here a letter that is saying, we are this wound of production. We wrote to NFBF so many weeks ago, and people now know that when we receive the correspondence, and I don't know why it would take me a week to respond to a person who has written to me. Why would it take a week? This is why I said you must have people who are there to respond to correspondence that is coming from people who are outside the institution. A person who's going to sit there and ensure that they respond to the people, to tell the people what is happening, to acknowledge receipt. I mean, it's a disgrace when you don't even acknowledge receipt of a proposal. And I think what Gigi was saying here earlier, that you need to find a way of keeping people on the loop to say, now this is what is happening. Now, and sometimes this is the only thing that they want from you, is for you to inform them. So I think it's important, departments and entities, to respond to people. If you don't do that, you are destroying this government. If you don't do that, you are destroying this government, I'm telling you. People, I have a lot of teaching them to medicine. I just sent others to teaching about people complaining. And I was thinking that, yes, you know, before the end of this term, honorable members, we need to have some of the, we have stakeholders from the ACR, and so that they tell us how they are being treated. But, and so that they tell us how they are being treated by the department and its entity. So that at the end of the day, you look yourself in the mirror and say, really, is this what, is this how we want to be remembered, by the people? Can you ask questions, honorable members, and make comments on the presentation? Honorable Macron? Even on the presentation of the department.
Thanks, Chair. Welcome to the presentation. Even though we got lost in the process, but we just hope it was not intentional. No, I'm joking. Chair, when I looked at the presentation as I was following it, I got lost in the process. What the overview of the department spoke about, you could not find it in the presentation of NEVS. On the department presentation, it looked like there was an over expenditure of about 2 or 4 million men. Yeah, 2 million men. But you don't find it. Let me just quickly go back to the presentation of the department, the overview. The entity has got 149 million, which 129 is income from government, né? Then the rest. Yeah, but their expenditure is 152. That's according to what the department has said. Then immediately, when they presented, I said, why that over expenditure is not there. Then I quickly thought about KPMG, but it's fine. but it's fine. It could be a mistake. DG, I want to understand
members of the board misused NEVF money. I get you that a complaint was forwarded to the minister arranged a meeting. To me, that is nothing. It's just a meeting where people meet, have a drink, or drink tea, then what? Unless if you tell me that it was not true, that there was a misuse of NEVF money. But if there was, what are you doing about it? I'm happy because NEVF on the issue of the CEO and the CFO and the other board members, you are recording the money. I like that. And some of the money has been paid. I saw some 75,000 and I'm happy. In fact, I must commend you. Since I arrived here, you are the only institution that I have seen following where the money is. Government money, you bring it back and direct it to services. But that must not be selected. It must not be selected. I want the department to respond to that. But also, I don't know the process that you use to allocate funding for feeding. I don't know it. Maybe if you can explain that particular process, whether you advertise or people just apply randomly, then take us through that particular process so that we are aware as members of the portfolio committee when we are asked in our constituencies, we are able to explain that particular process. Because it is very important that government structures must be transparent in their operation. So that it doesn't create doubts in the minds of the people, including the your bursary processes. But I want to understand how's your relationship with Sarah? Sarah, not this one here. Not this one here. How is your relationship with that organization? Because I am told it's at that particular space. I heard you when you say private institutions sometimes are too expensive. The cost that you can incur if you send a learner there might, you can take more than 3 to 2. Would that be a reference to such institution? Okay. Okay. No, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Also, thank you for the entity for the presentation. And I would like to start where my colleague touched on that. I also have to commend the entity for the process of recouping the state's monies. And I also, like my colleague, beg the question, why has the Department of Arts and Culture itself not followed or instituted such processes where there has been a misuse of funds? Now, it brings me to slide 15. Now, I am not sure whether that is the presentation. I am not sure whether the overview of the department is, I don't know where the discrepancy is, because the CFO said there is a there's an investment and the financial position is good, whereas in the overview, the three-year income and expenditure trends within this department, I see there's from a surplus to a growing deficit. The deficit is just increasing. So maybe, I think my colleague also asked the same question, but maybe I also would like to get an answer on that one. On slide 23, in terms of bursaries that was allocated to black students, and I need to ask, when you refer to black students, is it black in particular or black in general? I know these political terms, we're in politics here, and we need to have clarity on those kind of terms. In your annual reports of 2014-15 and 2015-16 and 2016-17, if I dare say so, there's an item that has not featured in your financial reports, which is got a beautiful name to it, a ring to it, local and global positioning. I would just like to understand where does that emanate from, how did that come about, because it doesn't feature in your previous records. Also, the other question that I need to ask is why has I see that the council has traveled to Cannes and Hollywood and so on, but I don't see any mention of Nollywood and Bollywood, which is closer to us, or as Nigerians would say, we in South Africa keep us better, think we are the best in Africa, that we don't learn best practices from our neighbors. And maybe maybe we set our benchmark higher, I don't know. Maybe I can get an update on that one. What is the other one? No. Okay, Chair, let me stop at that one. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable member. Can we respond to the questions raised by honorable members?
Chairperson, I will deal with those because some will go to the deputy chair and to the acting CEO. Let me start with honorable Khlodbo. Bottom up, also because I think they require just one line. Hollywood and Bollywood, very close to our hearts. That's why we're talking about BRICS. In BRICS there is India. India takes us to Bollywood. Nollywood is Nigeria. When I was talking about our strategy, I talked about us forming the Africa Film Forum, which now South Africa chairs. Nigeria, in fact, is part of that. And we are now developing that close strategic partnership with them because we want to harness the synergies, what we can get out of Nollywood, and then get it to work for us in South Africa. So much that the minister, in fact, has a particular interest. And he has given us this homework that we must actually drive what he calls Sollywood, which is now the South. So those three things are very central to our program. So rest assured that we are doing something about that. The other point about black, it's not used loosely. Black here, Honorable Claude Boom, refers to Africans, Indians, and colors. So it is the AIC group. The bursary and awarding of prelims, or local and global positioning, I will leave that to the deputy chair, but I've just jumped now to what are my 5 and 4, and I think that is Honorable Makundi, the bursary. Our processes are very open and transparent, and we use what we call cycles, and it is known in the industry, it is widely circulated in our website, so the film industry would know that in this quarter of the year is the cycle for the first applications for the year, second applications for the year, and so on and so forth. And so people apply, and the process, it is not adjudicated by the NFVF officials or by the board. We appoint independent panels. So panels are drawn from the industry. These are experts in film. They are the people who then, as a panel, look at the applications and award accordingly. That also applies to bursaries. Bursaries, that process is not adjudicated over by the board or management. We also have panels that adjudicate the bursary process. And that panel comprises academics, people who deal with schools, and so on, and then we award accordingly. The AFDA and public institutions and so on, in fact, that number of 28 you see, we've actually brought it down quite substantially. So we're reducing on private and now increasing on public institutions. But at the end of the day, students have the final say where they want to go. But we try and encourage them to go to public institutions. One, so that our institutions benefit from this money, which is from government anyway, to support them. And these have included universities such as Limpopo, TUT. So the university has benefited quite substantially from the NFVF, and that has actually enhanced their film department. And then the misuse of money and recovery, somewhere in this report, Chairperson, we have a page which provides like a dashboard. The one page which shows, in this case, what were the findings of the forensic investigation and what were the recommendations. So it deals with all the cases that were named, and even people who were cleared by that report. It's all in that one pager. And once the report was given to us by the department, we have acted on every case that was investigated upon. And Chairperson, I'll actually confidently report to this committee that that report were almost done with all the recommendations. We have only one or two outstanding, but we have made substantial progress. It was not just a slap in the wrist or what. It was actually even to recover money, and not only from the officials, but even from a council member who was named in that report. And lastly, Chairperson, the whole thing about specific, it is something we take away from this meeting, that in our future reports, we should actually be specific and to illustrate who the stakeholders are and not just give you a vague statement. And responding, yes, I will be following up with management to make sure that every single letter is responded to, and we also give an acknowledgement of receipt. So I've covered just about everything except Deputy Chair, the local and global position, and then the TG. Thank you.
just clarify something in terms of the numbers. Just to clarify the issue of our numbers not aligning to what the DG presented. So they are 100% aligned. He talked about 9 million in total of the regular expenditure, 2 million of which was an opening balance that was carried from the previous year, and 7 million is what was incurred in this current year. So as I think that's the 2 million, but we are talking exactly the same thing. And also maybe to clarify on what we meant when we talked about our position, our financial health. We maybe need to clarify the two positions in finance that you looked at. One talks to performance, which is historically your income statement, and the other one would talk to your financial position, which is addressed in the balance sheet. So when we talk about a healthy position, we're talking about our liquidity and our ability to be able to service our liabilities as they become due. So that's when we talk about the investment income that we have. So in terms of the obligations that we have, that we define as liabilities, we have sufficient liquidity in terms of cash and in terms of investments to be able to meet those obligations as and when they become due. That's I think what we meant when we talk about our financial health. Obviously, a deficit is not where we want to be. I concede on that. Nobody wants to be in a deficit position. And that is really caused from the over-expenditure that I mentioned, which has become irregular. And the global and local position, that initiative talks to our strategic pillar number 4, where the chair mentioned that one of the reasons we exist is to be able to market what we make in South Africa in terms of filling to global audiences. So that speaks to our marketing initiatives. So one of the things that we find is that we do very good content in South Africa, but we lack sometimes in terms of being able to market that. So that talks to the funding that we earmark. In addition to the development and the production, we have to be able to market what we do in order for the industry to grow. So that speaks to that. So the staff does as well. The ability of filmmakers to be able to attend festivals globally where they can also showcase what they do. That's what that pillar talks to.
Chairperson, the question about the meeting and the resolution of the challenges at NFF. I can assure the honourable members that the meeting went into length to identify what could be the challenges raised by the other members of the council, the HRD, etc. Then, in relation to whether there was money that needed to be recouped from whoever and the misuse, in terms of the Comparo report, the issue was the chairperson, in terms of the policy of the department, before you travel abroad, you need to get permission from the minister. Now, according to the body, the indication was that when the chairperson was informed of the travel abroad, it was based on the information given to him by the CEO, the former CEO, not that he himself had misled the council or the department. And in that meeting, this matter was also then clarified. So, in relation to whoever else then might be misusing that money, we are expecting that the council must make sure that they recoup the money as they have started with the process. What we do, we just monitor, because we requested that the chairperson and the deputy chair, they must constantly give the department update on progress of implementing the Comparo reports I hope that that will clarify, should there be any wrongdoing or any favoritism or bias picked up and failure to implement the compiled report, we as a department will have to make sure we follow that through. But our internal auditor are responsible for monitoring the process. They monitor whether that is being done to the T, the issue of implementing the compiled report. But that was my understanding. The other issue then that we raised were in relation to conflict, Chairperson, in particular to the three members who would have a disruptive effect according to how the other members were experiencing in the meeting. But even that matter was discussed at length to establish what exactly does disruptive conduct mean. So the meeting then, ministers, the resolution in that meeting was that first they must start working as a team. Leadership must show leadership in his capacity as chairperson, and that the members must then also go back and try to see if they can resolve these matters internally before they escalate them to minister. That is the door that was left open should there be failure, because there were other internal processes that were found that they needed to adhere to, like a right of reply, ability to be able to hold each other accountable in the meeting before the matter gets to that level. So the matter is not closed. It's just that the idea was that let them find each other first and work as a team. Should that fail, the door was open for them to come back to minister.
Honorable Makondo, are you?
The DG. You see, I was listening to you, but I could not hear you. And then I went back to the report to read what is in the report. I could not even understand it. You see, if you say to me that the complaint by the members of the council, that complaint that there are two members of the council, I think their names, including the chair, misused the NFVF money by traveling abroad. Then you say, no, it was investigated. The investigation says that the chair was not aware that he should not travel abroad without his travel being approved by the minister. It was an oversight on ourselves as a department. We should have informed him before. By the way, he did not know. Then I will understand. But if somebody asked me what he said, I can't even explain what he said. I can't teach. I want that point to be clarified so that people must not think that there are other people who are treated differently. Because we are not dealing with this entity only. There is National Library. We have got issues with National Library. It must be clear from where we are sitting as a portfolio committee that to us, wrong is wrong. And right is right. Unless if you explain that, no, there was an oversight from our part. Then we can say, from your part, who then must take responsibility for that. You see. But I want to, I think that point must be clarified to me so that when I go home, I'm clarified. But I want to understand the issue of the acting CEO. I must say I'm impressed. But I've got a problem with the unqualified audit opinion with findings. I think you can do more and do better. But I want to know, when did the CEO resign? Before March, isn't it? In May. Okay. Now it's October. The position is still vacant. How do you then explain that?
Let me deal with those questions quickly, Chairperson. Honorable Makhondi, starting with the unqualified report. That report would have preceded the acting CEO. In all fairness, the financial year ended in March. So I would not even single him out on that one. So we rest on that one. The second one, the acting CEO was put in this position on 1st June. I think we have moved with speed to deal with this matter, because now it's October, it's 4 months, and the process will be completed any time from now. Not the recruitment, applications, selection, all that is almost done. So that process should be completed any time. Why I don't have specifics, Chair, as you may insist, is because we then took this matter out of the council and we appointed an independent panel to run this process. But the latest information we have is interviews have been concluded. So if interviews have been concluded, it means we are in the final stages. So this matter will be concluded. And in all fairness, to really deal with the question of the recruitment, selection, and appointment of a CEO in 4 months, a remarkable achievement. I close that one. The last one about travel. Let me deal with it because I'm also named there. And you are quite right that we must be open and transparent about it, so that it does not come across like some people were dealt with differently from others. This page, Chairperson, that I referred to, which I said it's like a dashboard. If you go through that, Honorable Makhondi, it will assist. It will assist in the sense that, one, the first column is not captured. It should have been the allegation. Then the second column is there, the finding. The third column is recommendation. And the last one is the status, where are we? Now, in respect of my travel to come, because I want to answer that and to clarify it.
You're referring to this one?
Yes, yes, yes.
No, I'm referring to
this one. No, you have this one that was circulated this morning. It's here. Yeah, that's the one. But the issue is the same. It's about me traveling to come.
I want the person to clarify that for me.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Honorable Makhondi, through the chair. Just to clarify that, we realized as a department that a lot of council members were traveling. And in order to curb and manage the traveling of council members, Minister then issued a letter to all councils to indicate that any international travel by any council member should be authorized by the minister. And once the travel has been completed, a report must be submitted to the
minister. Can we have dated about when was this letter
written? The letters were written last year, Honorable Chair, in February. Yeah, yeah, before even the forensic report. I think the chairperson of the NABF will also confirm with me that when he traveled to China, for example, I then asked him whether he did receive an approval from minister, because we had not seen that. But then he indicated that he was informed by the chairman, by the CEO at the time, that his travel was approved, hence they made the decision. So it was okay. I think the issue is on the council members who are also found wanting, because in the report there was one council member who had booked two rooms in Cannes and also did the London trip where he did not have any business to do in London. So that matter was also raised with the council to say they need to pursue the matter and recover those costs from the member who booked the two rooms and also traveled to London and stayed for 4 days at NADF's cost, and when there was no business that he had to do. But all the members now, when they travel, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, they do submit, they do seek approval of the minister before they do travel. But that circular was sent to all council members last year.
When you say the council member booked two rooms and went through London, how does it happen that a council member would book two rooms and do whatever?
That is due to be established, because is the travel, is their travel agency that booked them? How did it happen? So we still need to find out from NABF how that happened, because it cannot be that I can book two rooms when I'm in Cape Town, Honorable Chair. So I think they need to just tell us how it happened. But we know about the London trip, that he went via London and there was no council business there that was from the report, and that he needs to repay back the money.
And it is NFVF that booked the ticket to London and booked the two rooms. It's not the council member that booked this. It's the institution. So let us understand that. Honorable Makonde, do you want to say?
Chair, I'm being denied an answer here. And I think it's a deliberate decision. You see, what I don't want Mr. Mulisa to explain. He can explain. I can take his explanation. But it will look like he's defending himself. But I'm affording you an opportunity to, because who instituted the investigation? It's the department, isn't it? Why can't you explain what you have instituted? I want that explanation. Did you hear what she said? I'm not so sure if you heard what she said.
Do you want to come in?
Yes, Honorable Chair. I'm not sure where the misunderstanding is. The department told the minister issued a directive that council members traveling abroad should get permission through the minister before they travel. That happened prior to the Compadre report. When the investigation was done, the chairperson was found to have traveled without the minister's approval. When that process of visitation was done, it was then established that he was informed by the CEO that the approval was given, which he argued was misled then by the CEO who has left. That is what I have at my disposal. If there is any contradiction information that he was not misled, I will gladly welcome that. We will then have to act, because I fully agree with honorable members. You cannot have double standards, particularly where this will set precedent for others to follow. So I am not, honorable chairperson, being evasive on the matter. That is the information I have at my disposal, and it's the same response the chairperson provided to the minister at the meeting we've just referred to, when the members had raised, among other things, this issue, and he had to respond, and all members of the council were present, and that's how he responded.
Is it one trip that is in question? Is it one trip and give it a name?
It is one trip and that's the council festival. Another one.
There's no question. Another one?
How much are we talking about teaching?
I don't have the values with me, Chair. I can request that I be excused, and then I make a call to our internal audit to get that fee.
Right.
If we cannot.
You are excused. You can go and get it. I think what we are saying as the portfolio committee is that the department must avoid the being seen as, you know, as favoring other people, not doing what is, do one thing to others and do something else with others. Because if that gets into the mind of whoever is out there, then there is a problem. If that gets into the mind of other colleagues, which are the board members themselves, then there is a problem. We need to ensure that in whatever we do, we are even-handed. Because if that does not happen, you'll have people raising matters now and again. So it's very important. This is why, because this meeting that was called by the minister. The minister didn't just call a meeting out of his liking. It's because of what was happening within the entity, which is really very dangerous when the board does not see eye to eye. And as the portfolio committee, our concern is that you have this number of people who are charged with a responsibility of delivery, of being a delivery arm of the department. If they don't do that to the best of their ability, then the whole society suffers. So I think this is why we need to be open, to be honest, so that at the end of the day, things are seen for what they are. So it's very important, the question that is being asked here, so that people who are now, even now, they are looking at this session, as we are sitting, there are people who are looking at the session, as we are sitting, and people who are listening to what we are saying here. And at the end of this, I can assure you, I'm going to receive a number of calls saying that, that was not true. They were not telling the truth. So this is why it's advisable for us when we are in this meeting to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, so help us God. So I think we will, if there are no other questions, or there's a response that, yeah, okay. See, acting CEO. Okay. But as I said earlier, what's important is for us to be open with each other. Because nowadays, you know what is happening in this entity? We are getting information. So whatever you are saying here, whatever question we are asking you sometimes, we ask you something that we know already. And we are waiting for you to say something that is different. We are asking something, because in your entities, because we did share with you while Mr. Matlang was still a member of this committee, he was the whip of the committee, we did share with you that in an institution, in an entity like this, you need to be open, and you need to open up from the aunt who's making tea to the top officials. If you don't do that, if you don't open up, if you don't have an open door policy, people are going to come and tell us things that they should have told you as the board. Because people, they want to say something about the CEO. You are in the pocket of the CEO. So people feel that if we tell him something about the CEO, he is going to tell us. This is what is happening in these institutions, to tell you the honest fact. And people don't know where to go because the board is in cahoots with the management. And they don't know where to go. Where should they go? They come to us. We are their only hope now. Because they want to go to the board, but the board is working, you know, with the management. So you need to guard yourselves, and you need to ensure that you run in your own lane, because if you run in, you don't run in your lane, even if you come out first, you don't qualify. So what's the problem here? If you report, you run in your own lane. Management, they run in their own lane, that you want to achieve the same thing. If you meddle this thing, then you come up with problems that we don't need. I don't think we need these minor problems that we are having. So it's important that the department now and again ensures that it refreshes your mind. Because when you are working really, because you are busy doing stuff, you can actually, you know, cross lines. You come out of your lane, you go to the CEO's lane. Unknowingly, because you're busy doing the work, but you need once in a while to step back and see if you're still in your own lane. Because this is a problem in the entities of the department, and it's a problem, a serious, serious problem. But we would like to thank, as we did earlier, the board members, because we know that it's people who have passion for this, people want to give back to the community, people who are giving of themselves to the community and not wanting to receive anything back. So we appreciate that, and we want to wish you all the best in the work that you're doing. And as I said earlier, you need to ensure that you do the right thing all the time. Because if you don't do the right thing all the time, you are going to be in trouble. I've asked Jabu to give, because he has sent the correspondence that was received from people to the DAC, and I trust that they have emails them to you so that you respond immediately. Tomorrow, you sit down and look at those things. You respond to people. This is what we are called to do, to be servants of the people. This is very important, and it must never escape our minds. We are called to be servants of the people. Even if they call you whenever, respond to them. But I want to thank you very much for the presentation and for the response in the questions, and we wish you all the best in the work that you are doing. We are stepping off now from NSA.
So,
yeah. Okay, who is gonna?
Chairperson, from the extract that has been forwarded to me right now in relation to this question of counseling, just that part, I'm just asking them to give us the page number of the report. But it reads as follows. The payment documents were approved by Ms. Ngwenya and Ms. Makwanya, and the bookings were made through Ms. Nkosi's office. Reference is made to Exhibit 23.1 and Annex 5. CANS type of event, CANS filling, 2017. Delegation attending, Mr. Tabiso Masudumele, was a council member. Mr. Philip Mulife is a council member. Mrs. Amamkosi, the CEO, other officials who are not broken down here. Description, accommodation, flights, and other expenses. What was budgeted for was 3 million. The actual cost in cash was 5.2 million. And the breakdown of those per individual is not available. Is what we will then need to get to say what was the cost per individual.
That I answered, where is the PA now within the structure of the institution?
Thank you, Chair. The PA has since been made permanent because after the investigation that ensued, on her part, she had responded to Comperio that she did not do any wrongdoing. She did not know the people that they were referring to. However, the CEO, the former CEO, was found to not cooperate when asked about that specific thing. So it left the PO in the PA in question. When I came on board, her contract was about to end. It was a year's contract. So then the position was advertised as per our policies. Usually, we first advertise internally, and if there are no further applications, we go outside. So, since there was no finding on the computer report on her, so she did apply, and she did get the job, which she is now permanent. It did not affect the structure because it was as it was.
Okay. As I said earlier, we are for fairness and justice. Yeah. So, well, I think it's fine if she was not implicated and she still she was not punished for something that she didn't do. Thank you very much. Thank you, DG. Thank you very much. We're stepping off now. NSBF, and can we have the National Library? A brief overview and then their presentation. Just to say, while you are looking at the technology, while you are dealing with technology, we have received some documents informing us about what is happening within the entity, the National Library. And As I said earlier, when we receive these things, because we are not employed by the department to deal with them, we advise people to send these things to the department. Say, okay, I've received this, but what is the department saying? And they will say, no, I haven't sent it to the department, and we advise them, go to the department. And this was sent to the department, and there was never even an acknowledgement of this. It came back to us, and as I always say, now we are doing the work of the department. And I have received, when is that, when was the letter from the department? Yeah, response. The response that was saying that they have received this thing. They are responding to, because we received information from an individual, and then there was that one from a group, you know, of people that are saying they are not at all certified, and then that was sent, and the minister has responded to that and said that they have given it to the board to look into it. And maybe if while you are making a presentation you can touch on the issues that are out there in the open. Okay, you received it on the 21st of September. While you are on it, can you please touch on those issues? 21st of September, now we are on the 9th of October. What has happened in between that period?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. On the National Library of South Africa, I'm also not going to be alignment because that's what we look for, and the entity has aligned its objective to that of the department. Also with their performance, they performed like Mr. Duzi at 90% last year. They did not achieve 10% of their deliverables. In terms of their budget, they have a surplus of about 3,000 because they also received a conditional grant. So that's why they did not spend their care allocation, though it's an insignificant amount. And then in terms of the qualified audit opinion, that's a worrying factor, Honorable Chair members, because they've been qualified for the past 5 years. For the past 3 years, and this relates to their heritage assets and gains from the legal deposits. I think the chairperson of the entity will talk to this one because they need to improve, but it says it will be a permanent qualification. And because we encourage all our entities and we do get their audit improvement plan so that we monitor it so that they really improve their audit opinion. And in terms of the irregular expenditure, they procured without competitive quotes, and this expenditure was not even approved by the appropriate delegation, and the tender was awarded to supplier, not also on the tender submission register. And that amount, because the official was dismissed because they transgressed the PFMA. And also, there was also an official who was charged with misconduct and a debt. They are recovering the debt of 97,325 because the officials procure without, you know, sourcing competitive quotes. And this is not in line with Treasury regulations nor with the Act. And also, there was unauthorized use of web cell phones and data services for private use. And that was amounted to 88,129, the entity did not report to us what action was taken, but we would want to also get. And then also there was unauthorized changes, which resulted to double charges affected on the same trip, where the people flouted the internal policy because you cannot charge double for the same trip, and then which was 15,938. So the monies were recovered from the official conference. In terms of governance, the council is fully constituted. The term ended. This is a new council that was appointed from the 1st of October this year. They are a new council, but there is retention of some of the old members from the council. And the management is very, they've got a staff complement. This is a huge entity with 171 members, because it's got two sites in Pretoria and also in Cape Town. And most of the members are women in the entity. And in terms of the oversight activities of last year, they had three council members, but they've got also subcommittees, so they've had 12 subcommittee members, but the attendance rate is at 85%. It fell down from 90% last year. The audit committee has been able to see three times last year. Management had four meetings, and the staff meeting is zero. And this is one of the complaints that was raised in that our anonymous letter that meetings are not held. And with the complaint that was raised, Honorable Chair and members, we then took up the matter with the chairperson of the former board, and who's still the chairperson of this board. And as the council, they decided that they will then appoint an independent company so that they can then look at the allegations that are raised in the communique that was sent to the portfolio committee, and also to the board, to the council itself. They had received that complaint. So the chairperson has then written to minister and apprised minister on the matter to say, minister, we've appointed the investigating company. They are busy with the investigations. We will report back to the department, but the date was not given, but there is a communique that went to the minister in the last 2 weeks, Honorable Chair and members, just to apprise minister on the status. We await the report from the chairperson of the council, and hopefully by the end of October, latest November, we should receive the report on the issues that were raised by staff of the National Library of South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Really? I mean, if staff members of this institution that I'm having are saying that we have a problem, does it need someone from outside for me to listen to their problem? Really? Really? Does it need someone else for me to actually hear what the grievances are of the staff in the institution that I'm heading? And the department said yes to that. To get someone from outside, how much is it going to cost? Is it free of charge to get someone from outside to come and do the work that I should be doing? Aye, guys. Yo. Because the first thing, this is what we said to DG, if you would remember, when people from Robben Island wrote to us complaining about what is happening there. We gave the letter to DG to say, DG, this is what the people are saying. Palestina, we are public representatives, so we say what the people are saying. UDG took this thing and gave it to those people, Abacholwai, to say, Pendulana, and took that and gave it back to the guy. This is what they, you can't do that. You can't. And UCG understood, and he took care of the whole thing later on. When you receive something, saying that in this institution, this is what is happening. Okay, what I said earlier, to say people don't know now where to go because they see the board and management as one thing. So they come to you and you say, why don't they go and listen to the people? Okay, we've received this thing. We know that maybe you think that we are the one and the same thing. Yeah, we are not. Can you tell us what is actually happening? Oh, no. Guys, please. And you say, okay, get a private thing to do this. I got that. Can we have a... Yes. Can we have the entity presenting, and then maybe in their presentation they will tell us what is actually happening. You want to come closer here? Yes, you can. You know, in this chapter 10 of the Constitution that I talked about earlier, it is clear here, you know, people's needs must be responded to, and the public must be encouraged to participate in policy making. Public administration must be accountable. Transparency must be fostered by providing the public with timely, accessible, and accurate information. There is something that saying, here you are charged with having efficient, economic, and effective use of resources. It's in chapter 10 of the Constitution. You need to ensure that the resources that you are given are used, you know, for what they have been given for, not for anything else. Like the little bit in this house, or this private story and deal with this thing. You can't. Because you've given as the board yourself to this thing. So I think it's totally unacceptable and you need to reconsider it. The first move is for the board to go and listen to the people. That's the first move. Not getting people from outside to do what they are supposed to do. No. No. Over to you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson. Honourable members, I'll start with the introduction of the team that we have with me. I'm with the National Librarian Chief Executive Officer of the National Library of South Africa, Professor Rocky Ralibibi Semenya. Next to her is the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Nkosini Mashaba. And there are two colleagues to my extreme right. I hope they will stand up. We have Dr. Eddie Maepa, who is responsible for the CORE program, Executive Director. Together with him is Mr. Mashudu Mabungu, who is responsible for corporate services. So that's the introduction of the team that I'm with. The annual report that we will table is basically an account to provide an analysis of our performance, and the performance obviously has been assessed by the Auditor General, so it is an audited document that has been presented to the Honourable Members. If you look at the slide, the presentation is broken into three categories. I will give a short overview of the governance structure, and then the next part will be handled by the Chief Executive Officer in terms of the performance of the entity. And lastly, we'll have a presentation by the Chief Financial Officer in terms of the performance of the organization with regards to the financials of the entity. We have several committees. We have a statutory committee, which is the audit committee governed by the Public Finance Management Act. And they are a statutory committee that basically assists us in terms of the board carrying out its mandate. So that relates to safeguarding of the assets, adequate systems, and the like. They also advise us on Rule 103 in terms of the how the entity has or will have to prepare itself. They look at internal audit function. They also look at the external audit function and risk management. So that is basically the core function of the audit and risk committee. And then we have what is referred to the board committees. So the board committees, in addition to the statutory one, we have the finance committee. Again, the finance committee's primary mandate is to guide us in terms of our financial resources. We also have the ICT strategic committee, which looks at advising the board with respect to the IT governance within the organization. And then we have another committee, which is the research and knowledge management committee. And this committee is primarily responsible for identifying trends in as far as library and information services sector is concerned. It also goes further in assessing the quality of the performance information of the entity on a quarterly basis. Last but not least is the Human Resource Committee, which obviously looks at the human capital strategy of the organization in terms of marrying the necessary human resources against the strategic thrust of the organization. And then we have the last one, which is Marketing and the Fundraising Committee, which primarily assists us in terms of coming up with various modalities as to how we can beef up the baseline that we normally get allocated by the Department of Arts and Culture. Before I hand over to the Chief Executive Officer, I would like to bring to the attention of the Chairperson, Portfolio Committee, Honorable Members, that the submission, we don't have a debate in terms of the annual report that is being presented. We are more or less aligned in terms of the assessment that was done by the Department of Arts and Culture. That's number one. Number two is that the Audit and Risk Committee also looked at the financials and the performance of the organization and also agreed in terms of the outcome of the audit finding. But I must say that the audit was completed at the end, actually post the statutory date of completion of the audit. So it's something that I need to just draw the attention of the members, that the audit audit report was actually done quite late in the process. In terms of stability, over the 3 years, I think the governance structures of the entity, we have not experienced any instabilities in terms of the performance of the different committees of the board. We have maintained a performance in terms of our core function. We have been consistent performing at 90% up to today as we present this particular annual report. What obviously is still a battle when we join the, or when we are appointed as the board of the library, we actually joined the board with a permanent qualification. So GRAP 103 was a permanent qualification, and we have been with GRAP for the last 3 years. However, in trying to deal with GRAP 103, we had numerous engagement. One of the engagement was with the National Treasury regarding the exemption. Unfortunately, that has not come to fruition because it was not implemented. In addition to trying to deal with GRAP, was also to engage the Auditor General in terms of the actual standard and the application of the standard to the works of the library. Again, there has been a robust interaction with the AG, but they maintain that they implement the standard. We can only get an exemption from the National Treasury. Lastly, we went to the standard board that basically sets the standard to find out what is it that we need to do as an entity to be able to make sure that we overcome this particular hurdle in terms of complying with GRAP 103. So far, we have not been able to win that particular challenge, but what we have done going forward was to basically look at going external and seek technical advice, and the department has actually set money aside to assist us in that regard. And we are hoping that in the new in the current financial year, we should be able to come out of this particular challenge. So I just wanted to touch on the issue of GRAP 103. And we will talk a bit, I will beam these slides, in terms of the matter that the chairperson, the honourable member, chairperson has raised with regard to the whistleblowing problem. And maybe let me inform honourable chairperson and the members the sequence of the whistleblowing problem, how it emanated. The whistleblowing problem, and I think it's important to share this with the members so that there is a context to how we got to where we are in terms of asking for a investigation or pre-forensic investigation in terms of this particular matter. The whistleblowing was actually received by our board member. After the document was received by the board member, we tabled the whistleblowing issues at the board meeting. And the board made a decision or took a resolution to say that the matter must be investigated by an independent investigator. The next thing was to take this particular matter to the internal auditors, because the internal auditors have provision to conduct ad hoc investigation. So in terms of cost, we were hoping to use internal auditors as a way of dealing or, with the investigation, because it was a board resolution that we rather have an independent entity to look at the investigation. In trying to appoint or use the internal audit company, it came quite clear that the cost related to the internal audit function to carry out this particular investigation was way beyond the threshold. And as a result, we went to the point of actually seeking a three quotation, and that's how we eventually ended up appointing a company to do the investigation. And I'm speaking under correction, but if you look at the figures, I think we are looking at $125,000 to complete this particular investigation by the end of October. So that's the sequence of how we ended up making that particular decision. At the point when the department presented the letter to us, the decision was already in motion in terms of implementation of the board resolution. So we received the complaint, the whistleblowing complaint, which came via the portfolio committee. And on that, I had already, on behalf of the board, I had communicated with the minister and with the DDG and the relevant parties within the department to keep them abreast as to where we are. But I will flag, I hope the CEO can just flag the details in terms of where we are in terms of this particular investigation. However, we can either do it at the end if the Honourable Chairperson allows. But maybe because I'm on the subject, can I request Honourable Chair and Honourable Member that I flag where we are in as far as this is concerned, and how we have gone about in terms of dealing with the investigation.
If you allow me, Chairperson, I will look for that presentation, and the Chairperson can...
Chairperson and honorable members, this is the status of where we are in as far as the whistleblowing case is. We are at a point where we have already appointed an investigator, and this investigator has, we have agreed in terms of the quotation that they have presented to the entity, that it will be broken into three phases. And those three phases, the conclusion thereof, will be at the end of October. So this is just an implementation plan in terms of how this particular investigation will be conducted and concluded. As we speak, the first phase has been addressed in terms of collection of data, and the files have been delivered to the respective service provider. And next week there will be some interviews that will be conducted with the respective officials that are listed in the whistleblowing document. So that is the status report, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you.
Do the whistleblowers know about this?
No, if I may, thank you, Chairperson. They don't have this information because, as I said, when the matter was raised with us as a board, we basically took a particular approach based on the resolution that the board took. Because the whistleblowing, we did not even know who the whistleblower is in the first place. That was one of the challenges. And secondly, to protect the whistleblower, we then said, let's rather take the route of an independent investigator. So they don't have this information with them.
Have you ever had a meeting with the staff of the entity about the matter of whistleblowing?
No, Chairperson, we didn't.
Why do you waste government money? Why do you do that?
Well, Honorable Member, we're in a predicament. We assessed the options of how to handle the issue. And the only resolution as the board was doing an independent investigation, which will obviously cost money. But in the process of appointing this particular company, initially the cost was about $500,000. By the internal auditor that is currently doing our internal audit. That's the first thing. So it was not a decision that we took recklessly to say let's spend money for the sake of spending the money. But we look at the integrity of the investigation, number one, and two, we looked at also how the outcome of the investigation will unfold in terms of protecting those who actually blew the whistle. So it was on that basis that instead of we didn't actually look at whether we should go to the staff and talk about it, because just the manner in which the whistleblowing was presented to us required us to take that particular route. So it wasn't an easy decision to take to come to the point of spending 125,000. So I acknowledge that it can be viewed as wastage, but I think it was in the spirit of the integrity of the investigation.
The chair, look, I don't know what is being investigated, and I don't know what is the story of the whistleblower. But from where I'm sitting, I see people who are running away from their responsibility. You appoint an investigator to investigate somebody that you don't know. But you don't have mechanism to communicate with the somebody. And this somebody might not be even aware that there is this process of investigation, because there is no mechanism. One thing that I should have expected from you after receiving the complaint was the board to convene the staff and explain that we have received a complaint. We are going to appoint an investigator who's going to investigate this thing. After the investigator has been appointed, we will communicate to you who the investigator is, so that whoever has any information can go to that particular investigator. But this investigator is investigating something that is not known somewhere else, and it's not even known who that particular investigator is by the people who have complained. That's why I'm saying you are wasting money. And the investigator is supposed to give you a report in 2 weeks. And you don't know whether the investigator has contacted the person who has complained. And you're wasting money from a face value. That's my view. You're wasting money.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm going to do an overview of the performance of the National Library of South Africa within the year 2017-2018. And I will touch upon a few things: the mission, the vision, the values of the National Library, the Enabling Act, the mandate, and performance report highlights, and the The next slide looks at the vision. We see ourselves, or we envision ourselves, as a world-class African National Library and Information Hub. I know that when people talk about the National Library, they think we're just talking about a public library. And I explained, Chairperson, when you visited us, to your members, that every country has one library that is called the National Library. And the National Library is that institution that was very close to government in terms of issues of libraries in the country. And its specific role is to make sure that everything that is published by South Africans or about South Africa anywhere in the world is actually collected and made available to the public and the world. In other words, we see ourselves as a mirror of the reflections, the thoughts, the experiences, the culture of South Africans. That is what the National Library is about. And we want to be a world-class one in that sense, while we are part and parcel of the larger African continent. So our mission is to build, to record, to preserve, to conserve, and make available a complete South African documentary heritage, which will foster a reading nation towards an informed citizenry. Our values are based on integrity, we respect our stakeholders, excellence, we drive a culture of excellence in all that we do, innovation, we remain committed to creativity and innovation, collaboration, we work with like-minded organizations. Most you will see when I give the highlights of the specific projects that we do, that we do most of these in partnership with other organizations. Accountability. We are an ethical and transparent organization. In spite of everything else that's going around us, we see ourselves as very ethical and transparent. We remain accountable to the executive authority while being conscious of saving our end users. And we use the National Library of South Africa Act, number 92 of 1998, as our enabling legislation. The mandate of the National Library, based on the Act, is to contribute to socio-economic, cultural, educational, scientific, and innovative development. And we do that by collecting, recording, preserving, and making available the national documentary heritage, promoting an awareness and appreciation thereof, fostering information literacy, and facilitating access to the world's information resources. We have six strategic-oriented outcomes. We call them SOOCs, which are very much aligned with the work of the DAC. The first one is that of building a collection of South African intellectual heritage and rendering a national bibliographic service. The second one is to provide universal access to information and services in the global arena. First, we start at home and go anywhere and everywhere in the world. We preserve, we conserve, and maintain the collections of the National Library in all their formats. We develop a reading nation. And in a little while, I'm going to show you the specific projects that we have that work towards each one of the schools. Five, sustained delivery of the National Library of South Africa mandate. And the last one, but not the least, we serve as a catalyst of library and information services in the global arena. As I said, starting here at home. Now, in terms of our annual performance, we had 58 targets, and we achieved 90% thereof, and we did not achieve six of them, which make up 10%. And the 10%, really, most of them relate to GREP 103 issues and other issues that are important to us, but we were not able to achieve those. And I wanted to highlight that one of them had to do with the amount of money that we had committed to raising ourselves, you know, during this year. And the non-financial performance that is seen here is just a breakdown of our performance according to the individual programs. The business development with 12 targets, achieving 10 and 2 not being achieved. The public engagement program, 13 targets, 12 achieved, 1 not achieved. And the administration with 33 targets, 30 achieved and 3 not achieved. I want to go into the highlight and speak more about the specific and critical programs that we run. As you probably know, we are, the National Library is celebrating 200 years this year, and we launched the celebration in March 2018. We have been around, when I say we, I'm talking about the organization, the National Library has been around for 200 years, starting in March 1818. And it turns out to be the oldest library, because it did not start as a national library, it started as a public library. The current national library is a result of an amalgamation of this very first library and the former state library. So we're celebrating 200 years of public libraries, or at least access, some access, however good or bad it was, to libraries. And it is the oldest social institution in the country. Here in this very first slide, with the celebrations, I know you can recognize some of the faces here. We have a very old minister that you all know, and in some of the pictures, we have a cake, 200-year cake, that we were cutting in Cape Town. And then we have members of the sector from an international perspective that were also part of our celebrations. I also want to talk about one of our critical programs. It's called the Library and Information Services Graduation Development Program. This program assists in skilling and creating jobs. We are looking here at graduates who came out of the library schools. We call them library schools. They go to a university for 3 or 4 years, and they come out being a library and information professional. There's a lot of them who have graduated, but they do not have jobs. So when we were given the money to work on the GREP 103, this is the project that really is being assisted by these graduate students. One of the major challenges that we have is just the sheer volume of the collections that we have. You're talking millions and millions of things that have been collected over these years, and nobody has ever actually came up with a register of the individual items in the collection. So for us to be able to fast track this and get this hopefully done in 3 years, we have decided to employ this graduate to assist us with the backlog. And so they will be with us in the next 3 years. There are 20 of them on our campus in Pretoria and 10 of them here on our campus in Cape Town. You have heard of the Mzansi Libraries Online Project, the project that allowed us to put seven ICTs, computers and internet, throughout the country, in more than 700 public libraries. We work within this project with provincial library services, and we have realized that as we put computers in these libraries, and we are expecting that the people who use these libraries have skills, and the librarians or the people who are actually leading the libraries have the skills to operate in the 21st century space, information space. We found out that that is not the case. In fact, there were so many libraries that were headed by people who had never even been to a library school, and they were called librarians. And this is where we really got sort of upset. You know, you don't call somebody who did not go to medical school a doctor. Why is it, you know, acceptable to call somebody who never went to a library school a librarian simply because they work in the library? You know, that's not acceptable. Here with the ICT graduate program, we partnered with several ICT companies such as BCX, Telcom, what are all the others? Yeah. There are about four or five different companies. But what, I have 10 minutes, that's plenty, I'm almost done. Thank you. What is happening here? We recruit the ICT graduates. These are people who went to university, who went to somewhere and got a, you know, a qualification in ICT. But again, they don't have jobs. So we recruit them, we train them to become ICT cadets in these public libraries. And so the first group that we trained was 65 of them. They graduated and they are now in the library space. The second group, we took in 200 of them. And 80 of those 200 were people living with disabilities. You can see some of them are in wheelchairs, and that was a deliberate choice from our perspective. We are hoping that at the end we will have all the other libraries having truly trained ICT professionals. We have the Fundamzansi Reading Competition. You probably heard of this. It's taking place every year in the Western Cape in George. We started many years ago in 2010 with only four book clubs. We are talking today about over 240 book clubs. It is a campaign, it is a festival, it is, you know, it has really invigorized, if that's the English word. But communities are really participating in this in a big way. The largest sector of our community that is participating is from they're inmates from correctional services. So what other things that we have seen as an impact here, if you look at South Africa's literacy rates, the UN publishes the literacy rates of companies, I mean of organizations, of nations, every year. If you look at South Africa this year, we started 5 years ago at 89. We were number 89 in the list of countries that had people who were literate. Today we are in the number one spot with Seychelles and Equatorial Guinea. So we think that these things actually work, but we need to look at how we are going to get everybody really participating in this. I have other highlights of projects that we do. One of the things that I need to, you know, I hate to say boast, but maybe we need to boast. We have raised through the Mzansi Libraries Online, which is a project that was funded by the Gates Foundation, we have raised over 1.9 billion rand in the last 5 years to make this work. And so we have handed over a lot of these projects to the provinces. Once we have handed them over, we no longer own them. There are provinces who are doing so well, but there are other provinces where things are not working so good. Some of the projects that we are doing, I've listed them here, but I want to just maybe talk about two of them. The academic standards is a project that deals with the qualifications of people who are coming out of higher education sector into working in the national library space. So we're working on that with the Council on Higher Education, which is, as you know, the accrediting body for higher education qualifications, and we believe that we will get a good standard. And then the National Policy Development Project also talks to minimum standards of libraries across the board, access, equal access to libraries. You have such, you know, disparities in the sector that if you look at the TVET colleges, for instance, we have so many young people going to TVET colleges. They do not have libraries. And universities don't even allow them to come into their own libraries. Even among the universities themselves, if you go to TUT, you can't go to UP or University of Pretoria as a student to use their library facilities. So, and all of them are funded by government. So we say, let's have a conversation. Let's find a way to share the resources that we already have. I will let you just go through all the others at your own time. Thank you very much.
CFO?
Hello, sir.
You have 5 minutes.
5 minutes. 5 seconds, we do. Okay, thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll continue the presentation just to share the financial performance and financial position of the organization, the audit results for the year under review, and also to highlight the challenges that we are facing as an entity. This slide, in a table format, is basically reporting all the income that we realized in the year under review. You will note from the slide that 32% was the annual appropriation that we are receiving from the National Revenue Fund, and then there's also conditional grant income. Much of it came from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I must indicate that the conditional grant income are specific to certain agreed deliverables in terms of the project agreement, so we cannot use it for other purposes other than to deliver on the agreed deliverables. Included therein also is what the accountant terms service in kind. This is an accounting entry. It does not represent cash income. It's basically a benefit from the use of state-owned properties that are listed or registered as owned by the Department of Public Works, including the private-owned properties that the Department of Public, of Arts and Culture, pays for on behalf of the National Library. So we have disclosed a benefit to the value of 56 million for the accommodation costs. The next slide, Chair, basically in a pie chart format, just depict how the various sources of income comes together. You will note that the blue one, which is basically annual appropriation from the National Revenue Fund, and then the orange one is conditional grant income, which was realized in the year under review, and then the light gray one being the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation amount realized, basically, and then the non-cash will be the service in kind, which is dark gray. That's not cash income, it's an accounting entry representing a benefit that we earn from free accommodation. This slide then to report on how the spending was in the year under review, where much of the money went. 262 million was reported in our annual performance information statement. The major economic classes of our expenditure were the conditional grant spend at 40%, which represents the usage of the money made available to deliver on the agreed project conditions. 105 million was utilized in the 2017-18 financial year. In the same slide, there is 26% representing cost defrayed, money defrayed to on personal cost, and the service in kind again, which is 21% due to the use of the property, private lease and state-owned property. So it comes in as income, but in the same breath, it goes out as an expenditure. Our total spend on goods and services is at the low levels, being 5% of our total spending. And the challenges relevant to this will be shown in the next slide. where we depict how our budget is under pressure, the annual appropriation income. So there's the next slide. On this pie chart, you will note that the bigger area or the bigger piece of the pie is personal cost. So personal cost against our subsidy allocation of 89 million takes 73%. And then the remaining amount is available for goods and services, audit fees, and other compliant related activities, including our subscriptions and licenses that support the operations of the organization. I must indicate also that if you see on the chart itself, the low spending on goods and services has the potential to then hinder expansion of our service delivery offerings for our library users. And it's something of a concern, and when we deal with the challenges, it will also be clearly explained. And then the next part basically is a summary report on the audit report we have received from the Auditor General for the 2017-18 financial year. We received a qualified audit opinion. The basis for that was our inability to account for library collection in terms of the crop standard. We have taken steps to respond to this. As Chairperson indicated, consultations were made with National Treasury, assisted by the Department of Arts and Culture, and also with the ASB to find a solution that's workable within our environment. Recently, we also went out to the market where we advertised a request for information to see if there is a potential service provider who can give us the expertise necessary to implement this standard and ensure we achieve compliance within the immediate. Our CEO has indicated the appointment of interns to help us reprocess the many volumes of our collections, which the AG indicated in their findings that we need to do what we call stop counting, confirming their existence, and then putting them in a particular structured way that will produce a heritage asset register. So that is underway. Given the volume, that's not something that can be realized in one financial year. And then there were also matters of report relating to compliance with legislation dealing with irregular expenditure. The current year irregular expenditure reported was sitting at 1.4 million. Of that 1.4 million, 94% pertains to one contract that was awarded in 2014, had to run for 3 years. It has expired now. We had to disclose the last spending on it of 1.395 million. So it's not something that occurred during the 2017-18 financial year, but in terms of the accounting and reporting it in the financial statement, you need to wait for the expenditure to be incurred and then reported. So we have dealt away with that, and will not have this going forward. Again, on compliance, there was a finding by AG on our inability to safeguard and maintain our heritage assets. We have brought in wheelchair management system to help us the record keeping and improving thereon. And also we have started the physical identification of our collections, and we appointed these graduates. Although these graduates are not merely here to do count of books, we respect that they are professional graduates, and we are exposing them to learning relevant to their career as librarians. And the last slide basically talking to key challenges. One is on the funding module of the National Library. You might have seen on our government information reporting millions of rands. largely because of the collaborative work undertaken by the National Library, where we brought in partners such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to help on key projects that are centered on the mandate of the National Library or linked to the work of the National Library. On the allocation we are receiving from national government, there has been growing pressure in the recent past, and it became worse when budget cuts were announced. You will see on that table, and to explain why the 73% of personal costs against our annual appropriation, the table there is showing how the cost of personnel has grown over the years, while the number of positions filled have always been below the total staff establishment, which eventually... So to explain that, it's not merely hiring more people, but it's other dynamics. You know, the cost of compensating the people who are already in the systems are growing at a rate higher than the income that's made available to defray such expenditure. And then the other challenge is the post-retirement obligation. Our annual contribution to this one is 1.5 million, so that's the cash we are making for these benefits. However, because it's a defined plan, and when the actuary value this obligation, we had a net cost of 2.4 for that financial year. So our obligation to this beneficiary have grown by a net amount of 2.4 million. And we do not have a plan afterwards to pay for this obligation. So the total value of the obligation at the date of evaluation in March was about 36 million. Compliance with GROP 103 remains a challenge for us, and we are sourcing expertise externally to help us find a solution. I must indicate that we did consult with other national libraries outside the South African jurisdiction. We inquired with the colleagues in Australia, the colleagues in France, and the colleagues in the United Kingdom. Their implementation of the audit requirements is different to what the South African standard setters have prescribed for environment. So their solutions do not necessarily fit the requirements set by the ASB. Jefferson, in 5 seconds, thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, at time for questions. Honorable Bosco. okay, Honorable Macron.
Chair, I've got just one question to the National Library. Why did you not meet your target? Because when you look at the previous financial year, at times you were at 95, then 96, and now you've regressed by almost 10%. Why did that happen?
Are there any other questions? Note the question. I think we welcome the presentation as the portfolio committee, and we commend you for reducing the travel expenses relating to international travel. We commend you for that, from 2.3 million in 2016-17 to 1.5 million in the year under review. But we've also noted the increase on professional fees. What's this? Can you really tell us what's this professional fees? Who are these professionals and what were they doing? Because we believe that the work
the people that are employed are people with expertise. Are people that can do the work that they're supposed to do. Because we find in some instances that there are people who are paid to do the work within an institution, but you still go out to find people to do the work of the people that are being paid to do the job. Then it's not acceptable. Maybe when you explain, then we will be in a position to understand as the portfolio committee. And there is a norm that's saying that, I think, let me rephrase the question, are the board members that are being paid for consultation, are there any board members being paid for consulting within the institution? And the importance of this institution, when you talk about encouraging people to read, winning nations are reading nations. And this is very important. And I think it's, as the portfolio committee, we would like to see the integration that we have been talking about from 2014, but how do you work with other libraries that are within the country, like you, libraries that are within the country? We know that you've been doing a good work, especially with the program that you mentioned of Fundambanzi in George. I've been following on that project and the engagement of the inmates is something that is really commendable, for people to read so that people really improve their understanding of issues. And while we are there, I also want to hear from you, how much have you spent on litigation? Litigation, people who have gone to court and you have to settle or whatever. How much have you spent on litigation in this year under review? And as I said, that we have received information on people from people who feel that they are being they are being victimized. For instance, a person is suspended and thereafter investigation. You first suspend a person, then you investigate, then you investigate. A person is paid for 6 months in suspension. For 6 months, that person is in suspension. You pay the person, and there is a disciplinary inquiry. That person is found guilty and dismissed. That person appeals, and the appeal and the finding the dismissal is overturned, and the person is still sitting at home waiting for the National Library to, and it's clear in the act, if you look at, and I said earlier here, we are doing things by the book, and if you are not doing things by the book, you are committing a crime, and when you commit a crime, you go to jail. It's in your act that if a person, if this thing is overturned, the finding or the dismissal is overturned by the person who is dealing with the appeal, you immediately, that's what the act is saying, implement
whatever that person who has been dealing with the appeal has come up with. It is not happening. Why are things, in that this first part of shop, we do things as we please. We do things anyhow, as if it is not a constitutional time, and we have to act according to the law that governs us. So I want you to explain to us as the portfolio committee, why do you suspend a person even before you investigate? You first suspend, then you investigate. That person has to sit in hold for 6 months. And the Labor Relations Act is clear on the process and how it should go. So, Department, are you aware of this? Are you aware of what I'm talking about? You know, they will tell you, I think the National Library will inform you on this. So I think it's important for us, in whatever we're doing, we do things according to the laws that govern us. And also, with your people who have left, people who have resigned, do you conduct exit interviews so that you understand why people are resigning? And if you do, can you tell us what are the reasons for them to leave? Are there any other questions? Can you respond?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to ask Mr. Mashudu to respond to all the HR questions because he's here. Mashudu?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. In terms of the disciplinary process, the NLSA Act provides that you, in the case of suspensions, you can suspend an employee. Can either be before the investigation or during the investigation, but you need to conduct or to cause hearing to happen within 30 days.
And the 5 months?
Are you
still within the law if it takes 5 months? And if outside the law, what does a person have to do? If you let that person stay at home earning a salary for 5 months and you are supposed to do this in 30 days, What does that mean for me to stay at home for 5 months?
Chair, the 5 months will not be in line with the regulations. It will be outside the regulations, so it's not supposed to be.
And if you are acting outside the regulations, what do I have to do as a person who has been suspended by you? What do I have to do?
The employee can use other remedies or like approaching the CCMA for unfair suspension and so on, but it's not supposed to get to that point. We're supposed to at least conduct the disciplinary hearing within 30 days.
Chairperson, if I could come in right here, what has happened at the National Library in terms of the interviews and the investigations not happening within the 30 days? This is something that was caused by an official who we have since dismissed. So we have actually, done our consequence management on that particular issue. And when we brought this to the individual who was the director of HR, he had no reason why he wasn't making sure that this happens within the 30 days. So we went through the process of charging him, and we were dismissed. He was dismissed on the basis of these kinds of things that he was doing within HR.
I can't follow. Maybe if I can ask a question with regard to this employee, what actually happened? Can we be explained what actually happened?
We're talking about the former HR director. He was responsible to make sure that when there was a case against someone, they needed to find prima facie evidence. And once we had established that what we were charging this person was actually there, we needed to remove the person from the environment at the office and then, you know, proceed with all the relevant, you know, processes. He kept on saying that he wasn't able to find independent chairpersons, and we didn't understand what the problem was, and we later found out that he had agreement with some of these former employees that they were going to do other things once they leave. They were just going to be at the National Library for a while, get whatever money they were going to make, and go start their own businesses. But this is not the whole reason why he really didn't do this, we were not able to really establish. When you asked him, he had no answers because he was involved in other programs that were not his programs. Even on two occasions, we almost didn't pay our salary. Because he would go to Fundam Zanzi, he would go to all these other activities that are happening everywhere and not focus on the job that he was doing. He was just, you know, not paying attention to what he needed to do. We have dismissed him. We charged him, pardon? No, he agreed to all the charges that we placed to him. Because once you have charged somebody, you give them the opportunity to respond why you shouldn't go ahead with the process. And he admitted all the things that were on his charge sheet.
With the employee that appealed, what is happening with that employee that has appealed the dismissal?
The employee has appealed, and I received the appeal report, I believe it was a week or so ago. But we haven't, you know, and I received it through my email. I haven't been to my office. We just finished Fundam Zanzi, and I will only be in the office on Monday, and so we can deal with it at that point. We haven't really responded.
But there is an act, that your act is saying that you need to respond when that dismissal hits your desk. You need to respond to it immediately. If that person takes you to court, are you going to say, no, I was with Fundam Zanzi, I was not there? Because the date is in the email that you were supposed to receive this on this day, and you didn't act immediately. And if that person takes this up, it means that the institution is going to be litigated. And who's going to pay? Government. Who's going to pay? The Department of Arts and Culture, which is government, is going to pay. And these are the things that we are warning the entities above that don't engage in things that are going to put the department and government in disrepute. Because as you do whatever you're doing in your institution, it's counted against the name of the department. When it's counted against the name of the department, that's the name of government. The money that you waste, that you can, have you seen on TV? The fruitless expenditure running to billions. And count yourself that I'm part of that when everyone else is talking about these billions that are wasteful and fruitless expenditure. Your 10 cents goes there. Because we take decisions on the basis of our emotions. And I've always said that it's not about us. This thing can never be about us. It's about the people. And at the end of the day, it's the government of the day that suffers. So I think this person has written to the deputy minister. You know what I'm saying? Follow this thing up. Follow this thing up as soon as yesterday and tell us what is actually happening in this area. You sent this thing to the office because it's the deputy minister that deals with land revenue. So you sent this to her office, and they are we are going to send you as a correspondent so that don't get people from outside, please. Drive to that place, sit down with them, and understand what is actually happening. And we, in the last meeting, what I said was that we know that there are three sides to any story. This is what it meant. There's your side, there's my side, there's the truth. And your take this time would be to read between the lines, would be to hear what these people are not saying, because that's what oversight is about. When we listen to you, we listen to what you are not saying. So when you get to the National Library, you listen to what they are not telling you. And as I said earlier, there will come a day when we take your stakeholders and put them here so that they say what you are doing to them. And you will be there to answer. You'll be there to respond to what they think the department is doing to them, which I don't think will be a good thing to do. But follow this up. Utabu has sent this thing, and you talk to the board about this, and then you are saying that this is a new board.
Honourable Chair, it's a new board, but there are three members who have been retained, including the chairperson. But the other members are new members.
So the CEO, when is her contract expiring?
The CEO's contract expires next year. I would have to just go back to the date, but it's next year. In 2019, let me just go to my report, check a minute. It's 2019. Yeah.
To check, because sometimes the expiry of the board sometimes goes with the expiry of the contract of the CEO. Okay, if it's 2019, it's fine. We are going, have you responded to all my questions, the questions that were raised by members?
Not all of them, Chair. I will finish up the remaining ones. One question was why you did not achieve all your targets, and the reason to that were mainly outside the control of the National Library. On one of our indicators, access to our site by library users, we failed to achieve our target there as a result of the FISMAS fall undertaking by students, which then meant less class time and less of the students coming to our site. Another one was subscriptions to publications and the monograph purchase. When we started with the CROP 103 project, post the approval of the annual performance plan, we realized that we needed to sort of get some reorganization on our collection policy. Instead of going on and purchase more, we had to draw down. Also supported by our budget pressures, because the funding was becoming a problem. And our revenue collection, we targeted to realize about 6 million. We came to less than 3 million. And we noted that we were not very effective in utilizing the properties that we can make available to use for rental purpose. But we have called for interest, have a company to help us service our customers better than what we have been doing now, just offering accommodation, but we offer a package that includes catering going forward. And on the number of audit findings, we targeted to achieve more than 95%. We came below that. And there were ICT-related findings that could only be resolved once we concluded the network project, the ICT network project. It did not conclude before the end of the performance year. It concluded thereafter. So those are the reasons basically that led to us not achieving all our targets. The other one was how much was spent on litigation. I don't have the specific number, but it's within the range for the year under review, which is 2017-18, around 800,000 for that particular financial year. But I don't have the exact number. If I can. On the professional fees included in there is the legal fees for attorneys and also the development of the LIS policies. We had professors involved in the process consulting on the policy development.
In your policy development, you had people from outside.
So, clarify. There was a project funded by the conditional grant, which was housed within the National Library, so we are counting and reporting on the expenditure. Some of the activities there included the development of the national policy, which Prof spoke about, and we had professors leading the process of consulting and putting together the LIS policy.
And the last one, Chair, was about, are there any board members who are being paid for consultation? There was one board member who is a professor at UCT who was part of the technical team on the policy, the national policy development. She is also a board member, so she was paid as part of the technical team consultant that he's talking about.
Allow. Department. This is an accounting authority, so it's a conflict of interest unless the person has declared that conflict of interest. Usually, we don't encourage it, but I don't know whether the board chairperson has really declared it when he or she did the work for the NEC, unless it was free of charge. You are paid. It's a problem.
Look into that, the AC, that's something that you need to look into, and then and maybe advise the entity on to say that, I mean, these are the issues that you need to discuss with them and ensure that they understand these issues. I think that's very important. And one other thing, when we visited the National Library some time ago, one of the issues that we raised was this 76% going to personnel, and we think that, you know, this is why the operations, the programs, you know, are hampered, because the bulk of the money goes to personnel. And as the portfolio committee, can we have, and the CFO have explained that when it's not that there are new people that have been employed, but it's the, you know, the adjustment of the remuneration. That can we have the organizational structure so that in our next meeting, if we can have the organizational structure, and I still remember the organizational structure that was there when we were there. So if we can get that organizational structure and see for ourselves what is actually pertaining. But I think you've responded to all the questions, and we are escalating the matter to the, in fact we have done already, sent this thing to the deputy deputy minister's office and DG. We'll send this letter of the people who are complaining about the way they are being treated. No, it's not a whistleblowing thing. It's specific now. And if you can look at that, and please don't just say to the NLC response to this, ensure that you take those people on board as well and caution your entity that they need to ensure that they do things according to the law of the land. Because if they don't do things according to the law of the land, they are committing a crime. And a good place for a person who commits crime is jail. So we don't want our entities, because they are Zalanamo, we don't want our entities to end up in jail because we are related. We want the entities to do things right all the time. We want them to do the right things all the time. So look into this matter, and in our meeting, not Thursday meeting, but in our meeting next week on Tuesday, we will hear your engagement with the entity and see and take it from there. Thank you very much once again for the work that you're doing. Thank you, department. It's not easy, and nobody promised that it's going to be easy. We were never promised that anything is going to be easy. The only thing we have to do is to do the right thing all the time. We thank you very much. See you on Thursday. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.